Speaking today with David Mintzberg, Democratic candidate for county judge in Harris County. David, we spoke before in March when you were running in a contested primary. Tell me again, as I asked you then, why are you running for this office?
First, good afternoon, Charles, and thank you for coming over. I'm running for this office because I see what can be accomplished in the leadership position at Harris County. Our county has a number of needs and issues. We need somebody who brings leadership, who's not tied to an old system of a way of doing things, and I feel strongly that I'm the right person for that job and for the position.
Now, of course, back in March in the primary, there were many more people coming out to vote Democratic that this time around than there were Republican. In the intervening months, what's your take on the level of interest and enthusiasm for the general election as seen from March?
The interest is enormous. Look, the March primary, I always come back to this number because it just so astonishes me. The Democrats had 410,000 people voted in the Democratic primary. And what's remarkable about that number is that it's greater than the last six Democratic primaries cumulatively. So it's an astonishing number of people to start working with who have self-identified as Democrats and who are really, by and large, targets to vote the straight Democratic ticket. So it's a wonderful advantage for Democrats to, now that we've identified these people, we have good names and addresses, and we have the ability to contact them and follow up on the Democratic message. That puts us in a wonderful position to go out and talk to independents and the so-called swing voters. And I see enthusiasm out there every day in people that I'm talking to.
One of the things you've made an issue of in your campaign is ethics in county government. Obviously, we've seen some examples of less than ethical behavior recently, including with a couple of members of, at least one member of Commissioner's Court. Current county judge Ed Emmett put out an ethics plan of his own recently. What's your take on that, and what will you do as county judge regarding ethics in county government?
Ed did put together a panel that did that report, and I've read the report, and frankly, I found it quite a good report, and it's very interesting that immediately upon getting the report, the odd thing is that before he was willing to circulate it to the public, he asked the people who would be assessed by that report, judged by the report, and asked to follow it, to evaluate it and give him their comments privately. So that was a great oddity. The report itself, while there are some things that I would do a little differently and would recommend and suggest, overall I thought the report was excellent. And so my question is, he's gotten the report, he's trumpeted the report. In fact, he talked about it in our last debate, our first and only debate so far. Yet when I asked him, how about presenting it to Commissioner's Court for a vote? At that point, I don't get any response. So, he called for the report, he's got the report, and now it's sitting on his desk. So it's really hard to understand what he thinks he's going to do with it. Moving into some of the particulars of the report talks at great length about the need for transparency in county government. That really, Charles, is one of the big issues there. How do we shine a light on the activities and operations at Harris County? And one of the ways you do that, of course, is disclosure of contributors. And so, interestingly enough, after the last contributions report, I got a copy of Ed's contributors report, and I'm sure he got a copy of mine. And I looked at it, and I noticed that on the form, there's a place for occupation and employer. And whereas my campaign diligently endeavored to fill that out on as many of our contributors as possible, we got a very, very high percentage. To my surprise, when I went through there, I saw that Ed had neglected to list any of the financial contributors, employers, or occupation. directly in contravention of the ethics report, which says, again, its main emphasis was disclosure and transparency, and he's followed the exact opposite path. My staff then looked at that and found that, in fact, not too surprisingly, but very, very unfortunately, there's a reason he didn't list those, because, in fact, most of his contributors do business with Harris County. So he didn't want it to be easily seen that people who were giving to his campaign were doing business with Harris County. We then did further research and found not only did they do business with Harris County, in many, many instances, they made campaign contributions shortly before or shortly after they had contracts that were voted on at Harris County. And we provided all that backup to the Houston Chronicle. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that somebody would be, on the one hand, call for ethics reform, announce their desire for ethics reform, trumpet the report of ethics reform, and then fail to follow the findings of their own report.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here for a minute. I mean, you know, obviously many politicians receive contributions from people who, you know, affect the business of government in one way or another. And they will all tell you, of course, that, you know, there's no quid pro quo, you know, the contributions and, you know, the votes, there's no, you know, there's no connection. I guess my first question is, you know, why does it matter? And secondly, you know, should those people not be allowed, you know, to have a, you know, to be able to materially affect an election, their constituents too? So what, how do you address that?
Those are two great questions. Number one, it's about transparency and disclosure. The ethics report that Ed commissioned talked about the need for transparency and disclosure. The contributors form has on it, this is not something that I invented, the form has on it boxes for employer and occupation. There's a reason for that. So the public knows when somebody is, quote, interested in good government and is making contributions to somebody that votes on their contracts, the public has a right to know and see that. So to me, that frankly is a no-brainer. This is something that the public ought to be able to see anytime they want to see it. Secondly, your question, shouldn't people be allowed to make contributions? Aren't there issues there of free speech and participation in government? You know what? Mayor Bill White has addressed that at the City of Houston, as have many governing bodies. And the rules are put in place that, one, for disclosure, but two, if there are blackout periods, so that how can the public feel good when an individual makes a contribution to a candidate on Monday and that candidate votes on their contract on Wednesday? And so there are many municipalities, state of Texas, and in fact the ethics report that Ed commissioned said, let's have a blackout period. Let's have times where people cannot contribute, especially when they have contracts coming up for consideration. I think that the list of people who gave contributions and then had their contracts voted on within 4 days to 3 weeks, frankly, it doesn't pass any smell test. The whole idea that somebody just happens to be interested in good government and the timing of their interest in good government is 4 days before they have a no-bid contract voted on is, I think, is repugnant to me, and I think it's repugnant to all voters.
Okay. Obviously, transparency and disclosure is a great idea. I think historically in Texas, one of the problems with bringing about ethical reforms like that has been a matter of enforcement. Texas Ethics Commission is, you know, notoriously toothless. What should be done with someone who violates the rules?
Well, the report calls for the creation of a commission. The commissioner's court could adopt those rules voluntarily. They could sanction somebody. They could ask the state legislature to adopt rules and provide for sanctions. I mean, there's any number of ways in which you could move forward on ethics reform, especially when Mr. Emmett is talking about this, that he's the leader on ethics reform. I'm calling on him to do more than just say he's the leader. Let's start practicing what he preaches. He ordered an ethics report. Present it to Commissioner's Court. I mean, it's now been 6 weeks since that report was presented. He certainly circulated it to Commissioner's Court privately for their opinion. How about presenting it for public discussion? How about putting it up for a vote? I mean, let's move forward on it as opposed to just talking about it, or in fact doing it as it appears he's done, unfortunately, burying it at the bottom of the file cabinet.
Okay, let's move on to transportation. Commissioner's Court recently voted to allow a new segment of the Grand Parkway to be built. There's been some criticism for this because it's, you know, far outside the city of Houston, but also far west Harris County. Basically, it's being built where a lot of people aren't right now. What's your assessment of this, and what would you have done?
Well, I was surprised at Commissioner's Court's vote on that. I met about a year or so ago with Department of Transportation Commissioner Ned Holmes, and he said to me at the time, and I kept my notes from it, that he anticipated the Grand Parkway being an all or nothing effort, and that he wanted to try to move forward on it on a unified basis and understand exactly what the entire system was. And I thought his remarks made perfect sense to me of understanding the need, the demand, and the cost structure. And I haven't seen or heard anything differently since that time, so I was surprised when Commissioner's Court decided to go forward on just one segment. I would like to see the studies that show the demand for it. I'd like to understand what the cost is going to be. As you're probably familiar, TxDOT has had some very enormous cost overruns and misses on projections, and I don't understand how we're going forward with it without understanding the supply and demand side and getting some lockdowns on potential construction costs. So I'd love to visit again with Commissioner Holmes about that, and I anticipate doing so shortly after November 4th.
Okay. There's also recently a plan presented on commuter rail in the Harris County area, some suggested lines like out 290 and down towards Galveston. What is your opinion of this plan?
I think that's great. I think we need commuter rail, we need light rail, we need to move forward on transportation needs, congestion, and mobility as quickly as possible. And we have to have a renewed emphasis on that. We need federal funding, state funding, local funding. We need everybody pulling together, including the cities and municipalities within Harris County. I think that's clearly the wave of the future. We are unfortunately behind on that. We're behind many of our major metropolitan and urban competitors, and we've got a ways to go, and that's a leadership issue. Whoever leads this county for the next many years is going to need to be out front on pushing for all kinds of rail and rail solutions to our congestion issues.
Okay. We are, of course, in the middle of hurricane season, and we recently had what turned out to be a non-event with the weather, but it didn't necessarily look like that coming in. What is your assessment of the current state of emergency preparedness for Harris County, and do you have any comments about how things went for the recent tropical storm Edward?
I have some comments about our state of preparedness. I have heard Bill King speak several times, and I believe he is the governor's appointee on hurricane preparedness. And every time I come away from listening to him, I'm scared to death. He paints a picture that we are woefully unprepared, undermanned, understaffed, and inadequately prepared for a hurricane, a level 3 or 4, much less a level 5 hurricane coming in and making a direct hit. To look at a tropical storm and that we weathered that, you know, we probably had more rain in the last 48 hours here than we did in that tropical storm. That was not much of a practice guide or drill. So I'm very concerned, and concerned at the real preparedness that's going on, as opposed to the boasting that it's actually taking place. When you drill down to the numbers, the people that live in low-lying areas, and how you're really going to take care of them and evacuate them, I think it the county's preparedness worries me enormously.
Let's talk about property taxes and Harris County Appraisal District. As you know, there was recently a threat of a lawsuit by HISD over the the level of assessments that HCAD made versus what the state controller thinks they should have been. Ultimately the state controller backed down, and HCAD's level, that I believe was $97 billion, was accepted over her figure of $108 billion. What's your assessment of that?
Well, boy, if there's anything that people come up and talk to me about at various events, it is the appraisals on their personal residences, and people are unhappy about that. They don't feel that the appraisal district is responsive to them, and I heard that last night. I spoke at an event, and four separate folks came up to me to talk about HCAD. Now, after you and I did this interview last time, I got calls from HCAD and representatives there saying that that's not so. And I'm appreciative that HCAD is trying to get better, but these are comments that I hear, and telling me that it's not so doesn't change the nature of people that seek me out to complain about their property values. I was also separately pretty surprised and to see that HCAD was requesting a budget increase. If my memory serves me correctly, it was in the newspaper 10 days or so ago that they were requesting a budget increase of something like 50%.
This was to defend lawsuits where the appeals had elevated.
Right. That's a pretty enormous increase for any one governmental body. And I haven't seen the backup for it. But that's something that I think Commissioner's Court has to take a long look at it, how any one agency would need an increase of almost 50% in their annual operating budget.
Okay. What would you do with the Astrodome?
that's a wonderful question. I am publicly on record as wanting to make every possible effort to save the Astrodome, and Ed is publicly on record that he's going to do something. In fact, at his last, at our debate, he said to the audience he was going to do something on the Astrodome. I think we need to get some real developers involved. We need to see about a real financing package. We need to put it under, ultimately, we need to make a lease agreement with a developer. We need to get the Texans and the rodeo actively involved in sitting at the table. And we need to see what can be done to save the Astrodome.
And do you think the proposal that has been in the works to turn it into some kind of resort hotel convention center is feasible, or do you think some other direction should be taken?
I think that's the most likely direction, but again, I haven't seen that precise, I haven't seen the entire plan, budget, pro forma, and proposal. It seems to me that's the most likely, but if the sports authority at Ed's direction terminated that contractual agreement, we need to find, if that group is still interested, re-enter into an agreement and negotiate an agreement with them and see if they can move forward. And if not, alternatively, again, Ed says we're going to do something. Well, I don't see us doing anything. We need to figure out what we're going to do. Let's get a real live developer in there and put a proposal together.
I guess for some people, the issue might come down to the county's exposure, the risk involved in whether it's a convention center or something else. I mean, what is an acceptable level of financial risk for the county in getting involved with a developer to do something with the Astrodome?
Well, I haven't seen any proposal I don't know that there's any financial risk until we see what a developer might want. And there are ways to structure proposals that can protect us against downside risk. We just need to see what somebody would want. And there don't seem to be any proposals floating around, nor is the county negotiating with anybody, including sitting down with the Texans and the rodeo. The way you make deals is bring everybody in a room and sit around the table and see if you can strike a transaction. And again, I've talked about this throughout the campaign. That is talking about leadership, and there's not much of that going on down there.
More recently, the city of Houston has approached the county to potentially help finance a stadium deal for the Houston Dynamo. The proposal had to do with foregoing some property taxes in a tax investment tax. Oh, I don't know what it is. TERS on the east end of downtown.
Tax incremental reinvestment.
Thank you. I lose track of my acronyms sometimes.
I do too.
Obviously this is relatively new news, so I don't know what the details are, but sort of generally speaking, what's your impression of that? And on a more general level, since it came up in the newspaper article, should the county be getting involved in city TERSs as a general rule?
It seems to me that the county hasn't gotten involved in that, and I think that's probably appropriate. In this particular instance, I need to see a financial study that shows what the county would receive in benefit in terms of making a contribution. You were just asking about the county's financial risk, on the Astrodome. Well, that's exactly the question here. In return for the county making an investment, what would it receive in return? What would be the increase in property values? How long would it take to realize that increase? And what can be done to mitigate the county's risk in that area? And I don't hear any of those questions being asked publicly. And of course, at Commissioner's Court in public session, none of those questions ever get raised.
Okay. Katy Freeway has recently opened, or is about to be opening, its HOV lanes, which are going to be, it's going to depend on whether how many people you have, whether you get charged or not. What is your take on the way that this has been structured?
I follow that closely, and I'm confused. It seems to me that almost every day there's an article as to when it's going to be HOV and who's going to be charged and what the hours are going to be and what the rates are going to be. And I'm looking. I'm looking and reading it as closely as I can. Until I could see a piece of paper that shows me definitively when it's going to be HOV lanes and when they're going to be told and who's going to be charged and at what rate, it's very hard. I think it's hard for the public to understand at all what's going on over there. And I've seen comments, letters to the editor. The event that I was at last night was out the Katy Freeway, and after people were done talking about HCAT, they were talking about trying to understand what is going to happen there on those lanes. So I think we need a little better public information and education session on how that's going to proceed.
What's your opinion of congestion pricing in general for like the West Park and or possibly Katy toll lanes?
I hate the idea. I hate the idea of charging people and charging working people, which includes a whole lot of folks, a lot of money to get to work. And it's a hidden tax. Our lawmakers say they're opposed to taxes, and then they slap it on people that need to get to work. Most of the crowding that takes place on the West Park Toll Road is in rush hour. Well, those people are going to work, and they're coming back from work. And to add tolls that are what was previously passed by Commissioner's Court before they had to reverse their action when they discovered that the streets around it were crowded and professed that they didn't know that, would mean that what they're proposing is that people would pay $3 in the morning and $3 in the evening at $6 a day. That is a quick $25, $30 a week. And that's just if you're on the West Park. That doesn't count that if you actually got from the belt onto there. $30 a week, $1,500 a year for people at a time when people are struggling to fill up their gas tanks, when people are now paying $60 and $70 to fill up their tanks. to slap them with another $1,500 really adds insult to injury. When we all pay lots of taxes, it's just a tax, and it's being passed on to people that it, you know, it's a toll road fee, but it's a tax. And I again find it hard to understand the same legislators who stand up and make noise about cutting our taxes are simultaneously trying to increase our fees.
Okay. When people go to the polls in November, how do you want them to think about this race?
I think they have a very clear contrast about in this race. They have a contrast between a career politician who's a special interest lobbyist who continues to work as a special interest lobbyist versus someone who's a business person who has contributed nearly $1 billion to the economic activity of Harris County. I'm the latter, of course. I'm the business person in the race, and my opponent, by his own statement at the last debate, said the largest business enterprise he's run was four people, three of whom were relatives. So at least that was my understanding from his comment. So it's a pretty clear contrast between styles and background and capability, career politician versus a business person.
David Mintzberg, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Charles, pleasure.